she's pure as New York snow. She got Betty Davis.
Welcome back to another riveting episode of Disney Plussin' and Cussin'. I'm your host, Tim Colley.
That's good. And I'm DP2600. How you doing, Tim?
I'm good. I'm getting into these bitties.
The hags?
I've been fondling my bits to bitties.
Listen, Joan Crawford had it going on. Betty Davis had it going on. That's the thing with the hags. They all hagged it going on at some point. But things are about to get spooky for us around here today. I'm excited.
So much spook within the last 6 months. Why don't you kick us off? Because this sort of thing is not my hag, baby.
That's good. I think before we really get into it, tonight, welcome everyone. We're going to be covering Watcher in the Woods. Some of you may have seen it when you were younger. Some of you unfortunate souls may have even seen it in school. But this was Disney's little jaunt into horror. But before we get into this little Disney jaunt into horror, some Disney adjacent horror news. Did you see the announcement of the Pooniverse?
No.
All right, so
is it gonna replace Pornhub?
God damn it, something needs to. X Videos
is still flying their flag. Fucking, you can salute to that.
I went to X Hamster and just felt weird about it.
You jizz might still be going.
Oh God, that was. I feel like I was still living with Cody on an air mattress that had a hole in it when I was watching you jizz.
I was definitely living with Kevin Thompson.
Wow, you just got me through some dark times, baby. Anyway, speaking of dark times and probably some jizz, Scott Joffrey, the producer of Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, which we've covered on this very show. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2 comes out March 26th. Mark your calendars. This episode will be released long after that, but hope you went and saw it. Hope you enjoyed it. But today they announced the upcoming Pooniverse, starting with like Guardians of the Pooniverse or something that they're calling
it. This is like a Wood Rocket thing.
So no, this is more we've got dark versions of Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Pinocchio,
Snow Black.
Winnie the Pooh,
Sleeping Forever Beauty,
of course. Basically all of the public domain
okay. Pooniverse, as in Winnie the Pooh-niverse.
Yes. Not Poon. Not Poon. As in P-O-O-H. Niverse. But I mean, don't get it twisted. I'm sure the Poon was intended. But yes, it's the Pooniverse, not Pooniverse. I should probably have clarified that a little bit. This is not a porn scenario. This is a horror scenario.
Nothing's a porn scenario in Texas anymore.
Fuck you.
Except good old Reddit. Reddit there to save us all.
Yeah, no, Reddit has been there for me. Just lots of gifts.
Reddit was always just like the warm up.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Tumblr. It used to be Tumblr was the warm up. And then you finish off to a good old fashioned video.
You were giving yourself porno foreplay?
Yeah.
It's like you go to Reddit, you get your news, and then you check some memes, and then you're like, I wonder what the naked women are doing. Is that how that worked?
This bitch just walked in and shoved a bite of steak in my mouth.
Inappropriate. Wildly inappropriate.
I'm reading Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat.
That's what you're reading right now?
Mm-hmm.
How is it?
It's amazing.
Yeah?
Do you salt your meat like a day ahead of time?
Not very often, no.
But you should.
Yeah? Why?
Because the salt gelatinizes the meat. It like penetrates the meat and like becomes part of it the earlier you salt it.
I'm in, actually. I watched somebody cook a 3-day steak the other way. None of this matters. None of this is any. Okay. None of this has anything to do with what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about fucking Disney creeping into horror movies. And so I did wanna make that big announcement. I also reached out to Scott Jeffrey today to see if we can get him to do an interview. As with everybody in Marceline, Missouri, crickets. Haven't heard a fucking thing. But
well, you just reached out to him today.
That doesn't.
Yeah, we must have really just like caught somebody. As he said, we caught him. When he was just didn't have shit to do and was like, fuck it.
Yeah.
With
Timmy boy? Name? Tim Jacoby? Yeah.
Tim
Jacobus.
Jacobus. Yeah.
We call him Jacoby because we're so close with him now. No, yeah, we absolutely positively caught him at a great time.
He is my best friend.
And yeah. the real learn there is shoot your fucking shot. Go for the gold. But let's talk Watcher in the Woods. Before we get into this, I think it's really important to note that this is not going to be an episode about Disney's dark era. Did this movie occur during the dark era? Yes. And I think it's important that we know a little tiny bit about the dark era just so we can understand how we got to Watcher in the Woods.
But the dark era is before the Disney Renaissance gets us out.
Correct. So the darkness, the dark right? era is generally
post Bronze Age,
considered 1970 through like 89, give or take a couple years. Depending
there were still
you're
some good
to.
70s joints.
Basically, after Walt dies. So Walt dies what? 1966. So spoiler alert for those of you just now joining us.
No, Walt dies in. Does he die in 66?
I want to say it's 66.
Half of the Bronze Age is in.
Doesn't mean they don't have things in the bag already, but here's the deal. So Walt, spoiler alert for from Marceline to Mowgli, Walt's gonna die. And then, hey, not a big deal, Roy is there. And then Roy's gonna die. And so sort of, there, man, Disney is floundering for a little while there, and here comes Ron Miller. Ron Miller is Walt's son-in-law, an American football star, who has sort of taken the helm at a time when nobody really knew what to do. So Roy was always the business side of things, and Walt was always the magic, but Roy at least understood why Walt made the decisions that he made, right? He had a little inkling into what made Walt special, and was able to harness that a little bit, but it's not too much longer after Walt goes that Roy goes. And so you have a company that's just not sure what the fuck to do. And when you think about movies in the 70s in general, Hollywood really wasn't exactly sure what they were doing. There's a lot of imports happening, right? Like this is the rise of Gialli films and B films, and the studio system as a whole is figuring itself out. But more importantly, Disney as a whole is figuring itself out. So
it's like a whole generation of people, or a whole decade's worth of people, that showed out for Star Wars so hard because it was so good. And that was what, 78?
77. Star Wars is 77. So that's
there. Little aside, there are people that are going to see Dune 2 over and over and over in the same way that people were going to see Star Wars that much.
Dude,
I have heard a lot of Dune 2 being equated to, like, it's the first thing that has been like a Star Wars phenomena in the theaters.
I just finished watching Jordovsky, it's so hard to fucking say his weird span, Jordovsky's Dune. Do you know anything about that?
His name's David Lynch.
No, not David Lynch. David Lynch is, I'm a big Lynch fan, and David Lynch's Dune is its own fucking thing. But before David Lynch's Dune, before the Dune of now, before fucking Star Wars, we almost got Jordovsky's Dune. And this dude had fucking, he didn't just have plans, he had the people. Orson Welles was signed onto this joint. Salvador Dali is signed onto this joint. Pink Floyd's gonna do the music for the Atreides family. This weird fucking French metallic jazz group is gonna do the music for the Harkonnens. He's got Mick Jagger signed on. Giger is doing concept art for costumes and buildings. Everybody who he brought in to make this film was the best and the brightest of their era. And everything that they did together in this movie that never ended up getting made, you actually still see as they went on to their own projects. And so I could talk about O'Bannon and Giger and Jordovsky and all the things that happened in this Dune movie that never came to be. And how it shaped movies as they were. But I'm really glad that you brought up Star Wars, because that has a lot to do with what happens here, right? So competition drives innovation, period, end of story. So with Ron at the helm...
It's like that. It's like Succession when... have you seen that show at all?
No.
Okay, well, it's a company that's floundering.
Yeah.
And so... because kind of the patriarch dies.
Right.
And they have a meeting where the, you know, young buck, you know, heir apparent is saying, hey, we're just throwing fucking spaghetti at the wall in every market sector, and he's calling it lifeboats.
Right. And that's exactly what's going on right
lifeboats.
Here. This is exactly like Secession. And so we're getting to the late 70s now, right? And every fucking studio except 20th Century Fox is kicking themselves in the ass for saying no to Star Wars, right? And fucking Lucas went to Disney first. His pitch was, this is a Disney movie. Every Disney film makes $16 million. This is going to make $16 million. And Disney was like, nah, it's not for us. Then every fucking buddy sees the success of Star Wars.
But Henson said yes, though, right? Not that we're not that we're doing Star Wars right now, but
Henson
was it in the second movie that Henson got on board?
Henson doesn't have a fucking studio. It's not like that. Like that, yeah, the Jim Henson Company's helping with puppets and Frank Oz and all those things. But you need a distributor. You have to have a studio funding your project, especially something this big, or it's never going to fucking come out. Like that's something that we're actually going to see a lot in Watcher of the Woods, is how much impact the studio system has on the final films that we actually get to see. But let's not dig ourselves in too deep. Let's not get off on a fucking tangent. The big thing here is Ron's big idea for
Lifeboat.
Ron's big idea for Disney is lifeboats. Yeah, he wants to expand the audience, right? Like this is what he's pitching to the leadership team. And I think the irony here is what nobody fucking understood, except maybe Roy, is that Walt had already expanded the audience. The idea there is that the audience already was expanded. It's not about making movies for kids. Disney was always about making a movie for everybody, making a movie that adults want to see so they're happy to take their kids to, because they can take their kids to it, right? It's the same fucking shit that he poured into Disneyland and everything, and it's right there for everybody to grab, but nobody fucking sees it. And so Ron's big idea is, let's make things a little bit darker. Let's get some adults up in the building. And so you see the success of The Godfather. You see the success of all these Hammer horror movies and B films. You see the massive success of Star Wars and Jaws and all of these things, and that's sort of how you end up getting a really weird Disney sci-fi feature called The Black Hole. It's how we got Tron. It's how we got The Black Cauldron. But again, all of those things are going to be their very own episode, if not three episode arc, when we start digging into the dark era. Season 5 or 6 or whenever it is we finally get around to it. But because of that, Ron has an idea that this Watcher in the Woods could be their Exorcist. Exorcist being the first horror movie at that time to fucking go huge. You've got Friday the 13th doing all right later on, right? You've got Halloween fucking crushed on no money. And then The Exorcist was a massive success.
A Sexorcist?
That also good. That's also
My mom has a story about when The Exorcist came out.
Let's call her and have her tell it.
And she was, I wish I could get a hold of her. I can't. We thought she was dead last week.
Oh, fuck.
I don't know what's going on with Kiam.
Jamie, get Kim on the line right quick.
Jamie, please, for God's sake. But she has a story about how when The Exorcist came out, she had, like, friends that knew that she was a Christian and were so freaked out after seeing The Exorcist that they wanted to come over to her house and pray with her and have have her help them get saved because they didn't want to be possessed by Pazuzu.
No.
Pazuzest.
Pazuzest. There's, it's there. Sure. It's there. You will catch it. Yeah. So here we are. We're Disney.
Oh, and I used to bike right by the steps in Georgetown on my way to the university every day.
The extra steps.
The
Stepsorcist?
The Sexorcist. No, yeah. Yeah.
Quit. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. lifeboats.
So here we are. Like that's your really quick. How did the dark era happen? How did Ron Miller say, "Okay, let's make some horror movies," and now we are ready to talk a little bit about Watcher in the Woods. So, Watcher in the Woods is an adaptation of Florence Ingle Randall's 1976 novel. So Florence was known for having pepperoni nipples.
Are we talking about fucking Pugh? She's got great nipples.
Oh, Florence Pugh? I was talking.
Oh, yeah.
That's a deep cut. That's a deep cut. Speaking of cut, that'll have to get cut. So let's try that one more fucking time. Florence Ingle Randall's 1976 novel. She was mostly known for short stories. She was published a lot in Harper's Bazaar and Red Book and shit like that. She would do two-page stories, and she wrote one called The Watchers, which actually doesn't have anything to do with Watcher in the Woods, just similar title, that ended up being turned into a Twilight Zone feature. Anyway, so just 4 years later, as Disney is wont to do, they find a good book, they get the fucking rights real cheap, and they turn it into a movie. You bring in John Huff and Vincent McVitie. Now, Vincent McVitie is uncredited, so John Huff is the only director that gets credit. Having two directors is always fucking interesting, and we'll talk a little bit later about why there were two directors. And obviously starring Betty fucking Davis. So... before we talk more about John Huff, I want to get people into the mood, the feel. Some of you have seen Watcher in the Woods. Some of you aren't going to see it at all. So before you listen to us talk about
it's pretty good. Just go fucking – if you haven't watched it by now, and I should hope that we would have put some messages out there that, like, this is what we're going to be covering. Sure. And this is what you should watch if you want to – like, really dig into this shit.
Watch it.
It's on last chance. Like, go fucking watch it. It's on YouTube. It's free. And it's... I kept waiting. I'll say this. It teeters on the edge of sucking. And I'm sitting there going, oh, this cheesy shit.
Yeah,
and
we're going to talk a lot about it.
It doesn't suck, though. It doesn't suck. That was good. That was, you know, It lands.
Let the people go watch it on their own, but for the people that aren't going to watch it, let's give you a little taste. Here is the trailer for Watcher in the Woods.
Okay.
Something happened in these woods. Something that has never been explained. it's happening again. Now.
Did you hurt yourself?
Oh, it's just a little cut.
What sort of person are you? Sensitive? Do you sense things?
The past pursues the present like a recurring dream. What began as a game ended when a young girl vanished into thin air.
That was my daughter's name.
What do you think happened to Karen?
I think she's still out there.
Karen is trying to come back.
What did you see? That Karen outside there. Don't you understand? It's someone else.
Only Jan can help Karen. But who's going to help Jan? Betty Davis, Carol Baker, David McCallum, and Lynn Holly Johnson.
Whatever happened to my Karen could happen to you.
The Watcher in the Woods.
Whatever happened to...
Fucking spooky, dude.
This is why I don't, I mean, at a certain point, like in my early 20s, I decided fucking trailers are ass. M. Night Shyamalan, yeah. Like so many aspects of the movie.
Sure.
Because they lead you on some breadcrumb trails and that fucking ruined like three of them.
So yeah, yeah. So you got to remember the time that we're living in though, right? Like one... Let's not fucking forget that this is a Disney podcast and we're talking about a Disney movie. That shit did not sound like any Disney movie that we've ever discussed before. And you have to remember that, you know, this is pre-internet. This is pre-TV. No, I mean there is TV, but like this isn't necessarily, you're not going to see these trailers on TV, right? Like you're going to see the trailer that you just saw 6 weeks before the movie comes out, and you're going to think to yourself, oh, fuck, that looks good. And you're going to forget most of that shit between now and then. And yes, the whole thing is fucking spoilers. The whole trailer is spoilers.
They were still doing this shit. They're still doing this shit today, but they were doing this shit in the fucking late 90s, early aughts, when, like, me and Andy were sitting at his fucking house. We have this joke that because we watched a trailer for The Glass House that was, like, 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it, like, tells, like, everything that fucking happens in the movie.
No, I don't...
Like, the whole joke is, like, note to self, The Glass House was a good movie.
That's...
After we watched the trailer, yeah.
Morgan's so fucking tired of me leaning over at the movie theater going, hey, that was a good movie. After every fucking trailer. I get it. I understand the distaste. I also don't like trailers. And, to be fair, they've gotten pretty good thanks to fucking... editing and digital whatnot, they will play a lot of cut scenes or scenes out of order, or they'll add a lot of shit into the scene itself to misdirect. There's a lot more misdirection in trailers than there was back then. But anyway, that's for those of you who aren't going to see Watcher in the Woods, that's just to help you understand the tone of the film, or at least one of the many tones of the film. So where does a movie get its voice? Auteur versus fucking collaboration, right? Fucking all of the things you talk about with a film. So you have John Huff. John is hot off the heels of directing Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry. Huffing and puffing. Which I was actually excited to see, because oddly enough, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry has a special place in my heart from the long, long ago. I don't know why. I don't remember how Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry entered my domain, but for a long time...
Yeah, I'm a Dirty Harry guy.
Yeah, that's... I'm not. Fuck Clint Eastwood. Anyway, so...
Really?
You might also recognize...
Get off his lawn, bro.
Jay Huff's directorial style from a little film that we covered together, Escape to Witch Mountain.
And honest, maybe he has... I don't know. The girl kind of reminded me of the girl in Escape to Witch Mountain.
So there's a
her,
lot of...
Her IRL name is Kyle.
There's a lot of stuff going on here. So you've got John Huff. John was working on a ton of TV shows in the 60s, started doing films, left England to move to Hollywood specifically to try to work his way into Disney. Then you've got Vince McVitie, who gets that directorial credit without getting credited, right? So McVitie is fully a TV guy. And Huff and McVitie don't really work together a lot on this film, but it's important to mention him right now early in this discussion because he's going to come back at the end. So I think part of what this movie really struggled with was finding its voice. And I was trying to figure out like why I couldn't put my finger on exactly what this thing wanted to be. And we'll get to that. So you've got a really eclectic screenwriting team here. So at the core of it, this is a Hammer horror film with Disney handcuffs on it. So how much do you know about the Hammer horror productions, Tim?
I don't know anything. I was going to ask you what that meant.
So Hammer Films was a company, it started like back in the 30s. 20s and 30s with the silent era, but what Hammer Films really came to be known for were these like British gothic horror movies. Think Edgar Allan Poe movies. Think dark gothic Dracula movies. Think Vincent Price and Christopher Plummer and fucking period piece horror movies, right? Like these really dark, brooding, bloody horror films. B-films, drive-in films for sure, but respected. Definitely respected. The kind of thing that when you and your buddies see Hammer Horror pop up, you're like, fuck yeah, here we go. This is going to be one of those. So for one or two of our listeners, when they hear that this is a Hammer horror joint, it will make a lot of sense as to the tone. And that comes from Huff himself, but it also comes from our first credited screenwriter, Brian Clemens. So Brian Clemens worked for Hammer Horror for a long time. He also spent some time with Jay Huff working on TV. And I think that's where you start to get those really like with Huff's directorial style and Clemens' writing, those are going to be the types of scenes that we have with when they're doing the fucking seance in the cathedral and shit like that, right? So that's where you're mm-hmm. going to get those kinds of things from. Now, next on the list, we have Harry Spalding. Harry Spalding is somewhat of an unwritten B-movie legend. He spent most of his career with Robert Lipper and Maury Dexter. This isn't a film studies class. I'm not going to fucking dig into Robert Lipper and all the fucking theaters he owned and all of the fucking movies that he gets credit for. But one or two people that listen to our podcast may know who those guys are. Again, think B-horror movies, right? Just fucking... crank them out, spend $10,000 to make a million, let's go. And then you have, and this is where things get fucking weird for me, you've got Rosemary Ann Sisson. Now, she's not just a British playwright, Cambridge-educated British playwright, she's also a Shakespearean scholar. And when they set up the Shakespeare Society at Haight-on-Ashbury or wherever the fuck it is, again, this isn't a Shakespeare class either, her father,
definitely not
her
hate on Ashbury.
Her
that's like the intersection in San Francisco where the hippie movement.
Yeah, you're right. I've been drinking already. Stratford upon Avon. I'm not a fucking moron here. Stratford upon Avon. Yeah,
where Shakespeare's from. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where they. So her dad is the head of the society during their introduction, and so she is known for being one of the more prolific period playwrights. You want something Elizabethan? You call fucking
Rosemary Sisson.
You call Rosemary Sisson. And so when you think about those people together, you've got these fucking B-movie fucking crank-em-out writers and these fucking Hammer horror gothic writers getting paid by Disney to make the movie that Disney thinks they want to make. It's sort of why this film feels so episodic. Right, it's scene, then scene, then scene, then scene, then scene, and they're kind of loosely tied together by plot, right? Excuse me, hold on. But each scene sort of has its own feel. And so that's sort of why I asked you earlier which cut that you watched. 'Cause you can really recognize those elements in the full cut that we saw, created by.
Oh, I'm very interested for you to tell me, like, as we're walking through the film, which I do want to do. I hope that you want to do that too, right?
To an extent, yeah.
I want to know where the divergence happens.
Honestly, it's the very beginning, it's the fucking race, and it's the very end. But you start with we'll dig into the beginning later, but that intro is so dark, and that supercut, the person who made it actually deserves credit. Forgive me for pulling things off just a little bit, but like, somebody took a ton of fucking time first upgrading this thing to 4K. And that triggered Puppy. So, triggered Puppy on YouTube.
Not Narek.
No. Which is also a triggered puppy. User triggered Puppy.
Narek seems chill as fuck.
On YouTube deserves all the credit for editing the deleted scenes back into the film, putting the deleted ending back in, and splicing it together with the Disney ending in a way that makes it feel almost seamless. Really, really great job. If you're going to watch the movie for free, that's where you need to do it. Dude fucking killed it. Anyway,
I think that if I can
go ahead.
Speak up,
yeah.
Just for a second,
yeah.
Like, from what I have delved into regarding a term that you have not brought up yet, two terms that you haven't brought up yet, and I'm sorry if I'm stealing your thunder, but
no.
We're talking about one, hag-sploitation,
mm-hmm.
and another, psycho biddy, and we're talking about genres here.
Now, hagsploitation and psycho biddies are essentially the same thing. One's a kinder name.
Essentially. Okay, so I didn't do any research on this whatsoever. However, like, there's a tradition that so everybody seems to, and you know, this is like me throwing up a puck for you to shoot, right? Everybody seems to regard the beginning of this genre as whatever happened to Baby Jane with Bette Davis and Joan Crawford,
fucking
who are two aging starlets.
Yeah.
From, and I would love to see the movie, but you know, I don't want to belabor that particular movie. And I think that, like, from what I remember from Mr. Schumacher's class, there is this, it's like the first time anybody did a Tarantino where they resurrected somebody that was out of vogue and brought them in to kind of reprise their role reprise their stardom in a different mood.
Right.
And that was Sunset Boulevard with Gloria Swanson being, you see it in like Looney Tunes and shit, right? Like the woman walking up and being like, I'm ready for my close up, Mr. DeMille, yeah. All deranged and shit.
Yeah.
Now, that, you know, that's just an aspect of that movie, but that's a My Star Has Faded. It's like the fucking Metallica song, The Memory Remains.
It's exactly like that.
Okay, so it's what happens to you when you stop being the pretty girl, right? The hot chick.
Yeah.
But you so they start using you in ways that utilize your talent, but you're not the hot chick anymore.
Correct.
And so we see the accordion fucking expand on this entire, you know, decades long at most, maybe one decade long at least, little moment of them doing this a lot in ways that are less and less elegant than, let's say, Sunset Boulevard, which happened years before. Or whatever happened to Baby Jane, which seems to be regarded very highly.
Because it's fucking awesome. Whatever happened, we're not going to spend too much time talking about whatever happened to Baby Jane. And to be perfectly honest, I spent a week.
But I would like to talk. I would like for you to talk about it a little bit because it's kind of the progenitor. It's like kind of the primordial ooze, or maybe Sunset Boulevard is, but definitely. The psycho biddy genre is widely regarded as being spawned from this pool.
It kind of starts with whatever happened to Baby Jane. It almost ends right around Watcher in the Woods. Watcher in the Woods, if anytime you look up a list of hagsploitation flicks or psycho biddy flicks, Watcher in the Woods is always in the back five of lists of that.
Well, because genre. Watcher in the Woods does a whole lot of dead ends. It does a whole lot of, it does a whole lot of red herrings.
And it's
because Betty Davis's character is not a psycho biddy in this film. We are just
so
drawn along a baited breadcrumb trail to think that she is.
So that's how most of these work. Psycho biddy or hag or whatever you want to call it is really just the idea of an older woman being treated as a less than normal person, right? This is any time, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be a fading starlet, although it more often than not was, because they were cheap. You get, and so there's actually, so, okay, so part of the reason I didn't want to get too far into hagsploitation is because I have a lot to say about it, and I actually have a lot more to learn about it. I started going into a hagsploitation rabbit hole that I couldn't get myself out of, and now I kind of want to save part of that conversation for when we get to Shelley Duvall, because she has a new movie coming out too, which is sort of a revival of the psycho biddy genre. You've also got movies like T.I. West's Pearl or mm-hmm. X, right? And probably a little bit in Maxine, that concept of young, beautiful, sexy, sultry starlet and the woman that she becomes and the emotions that tie around that. So whatever happened to Baby Jane works so fucking well for a couple of reasons. One, Joan Crawford and Betty Davis are really fucking good at what they do. Plain and simple. They're the best in the goddamn business. Like, they were stars not just because they were sexy, and they were. They were stars because they were fucking good. Like, they earned it in a time when you kind of had to earn it, right? And so when you have the ability to get Betty Davis and Joan Crawford in the same fucking room together, you do it. But the thing about Whatever Happened to Baby Jane is the whole plot to the movie is you have two sisters. One was a rising star. One was sort of a left behind. And then those roles get reversed, right? So Baby Jane is kind of a one-trick pony who can't act. And it turns out that her younger, quieter, slightly more pretty sister is fucking really great when it comes time for puberty to happen, right? And so Baby Jane hits her with a fucking car and cripples her and career over. But then you have these two women living together in a home at each other's throats, right? You have the hag.
Is it a little bit Misery?
It's a little bit misery, and I mean, yeah, you've got Joan Crawford's in a wheelchair at the top of the fucking stairs. Yes, it's a little bit Misery, it's a little bit Rear Window, it's a little bit uncomfortable, but it was also all true. Like, Bette Davis and Joan Crawford also had that feud going on in real life. So they fucking hated each other, and then they sign on to this movie to play women that fucking hate each other, kind of for the same reasons that they hated each other in the movie. It's not an autobiographical film, but it was very clearly written around their real lives, and they were at each other's throats the whole fucking time. So I read a few scholarly articles on it. And then Ryan Murphy, love him or hate him, has also created a show that I think a lot of people are probably familiar with called The Feud. Which really focuses on that Bette Davis, Joan Crawford.
It's actually called Family Feud, and it was created by Steve Harvey.
Oh, are you really gonna steal that fucking credit from Louis Anderson?
Wasn't it Al Borland?
He was there too.
Riley Gale's ghost is gonna pop up out of the floor and punch me in the face again.
at the Power Trip reunion show, they should let you go. They should throw you into the pit as an effigy every fucking night. That's your claim to fame, my man. But nobody punched.
I was just defending your honor. I was just defending your honor, baby.
I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying I don't remember it that way. Anyway, so yeah, so this is that. This is. You have the opportunity to get an incredible name, and you saw it. Almost every fucking Bette Davis scene is in that trailer. She doesn't get a ton of screen time. She is a.
It's also a weird as fuck trailer.
It's a weird as fuck film.
Wait, are we talking about Watcher in the Woods or Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
Both. Oh no, the Whatever Happened to Baby Jane trailer is fucking weird.
Movie trailers were weird back then too, because they're like, hello, come on a little journey with us while we talk to some of the people that are making this flick.
Yeah. No, it's
like, oh, this man's about to commit a murder. We like to call him a director.
So,
and he's done four pictures before this.
So before I dug into Watcher in the Woods as much as I have, I really wanted to focus on the hag-sploitation aspect because it's just interesting to me.
Aspect.
Because it is. It's really interesting to me, and I am a genre film fan, which is why when I started digging a little bit more, I started to recognize, oh, fuck, this movie has all of these different genre film legends sort of doing their own thing, and they're all being handcuffed by Ron and the Disney Corporation, and everything that Disney thinks that they want, they come back and go, I don't fucking know. Maybe don't do that. And so we get a movie that is, man, is this a gothic horror? Is this a ghost flick? Is it strictly hagsploitation? Is this going to be a slasher? Is it a thriller? Is it, spoiler alert, fucking sci-fi? Like, what the fuck does this movie want to be?
It's a ghost flick. It's a ghost flick.
Yeah, but you don't really know that it's... And it's not a ghost flick. It's
kind of, they take you on a ride.
It's a ghost flick for a while, but like, okay, so.
Okay, but that's the problem with horror in general, is that they always have to do a weird-ass ending, and usually it takes the piss out of the rest of the movie.
So I don't think, so this is just, maybe it's my reading.
Horror movies are a thrill ride. That's why they kind of all suck a little bit.
One, go fuck yourself. No, they don't. And two, they don't.
They do, because like none of them... really wrap things up organic. Mm-mm. Okay. I mean, that's definitely hyperbolic. It's hyperbolic. But that's my experience with horror movies. And you got to remember that I started watching horror movies like in my teens to early 20s because I was straight up not allowed to watch them as a kid.
Sure. So they are.
But they always feel like they fucking fudge the landing.
They are formulaic, right? And very often when you have. Okay. So that's where the studio system becomes a fucking problem, right? Like, that's where you make a movie. Congratulations, you got somebody to pay for your movie. You have producers telling you what you can and can't do. You have the fucking studio telling you what you can and can't do. You've got people coming in and going, all right, so why? Why do your characters behave the way that they do? And you, at this point, can't say to them, well, because I fucking said so. That's how my screenwriters wrote it. That's how I directed it. Let me make my fucking art. That's one of the things I really liked about Jodorowsky, is he's trying to pitch this film, and it's going to be like his version of Dune was going to be like 3.5 hours long. And he had a couple of studios say, well, hey, could you make it 90 minutes? 90 minutes is easier to sell to theaters. 90 minutes is easier to run on TV. Can you cut it down to 90 minutes? And he's like, fuck you. I'm going to make it 22 hours. I'm going to make it 30 hours. I'm going to make it however the fucking long I need to make it to tell the story that I need to tell. And you just can't do that. Like, and that's part of what happened with David Lynch's Dune. And so, especially with a horror movie, especially a big budget release horror movie or something coming from a studio like Disney or 20th Century Fox, what's going to happen is they're going to take the movie that you make and they're going to fucking show it to a test audience of randos. And mind you, the test audience of randos that they're going to show it to half of the time is going to be fucking 50-year-old women, because that's who's off work on the Tuesday afternoon that they're showing a free movie for their fucking film screen. Like, not to sound sexist, but especially back then in the 70s, man, like it is retirees, it's housewives, it is fucking, these are not the people that care about your horror movie. And so, yeah, what they're going to say is, we didn't like the ending, or we didn't understand why this happened. And the fucking studio is going to come to you and say, we're not going to release it unless you change this and this and this. It's how we, the people, were able to change Sonic's fucking silly teeth, right? So many people said, no, fuck you. This isn't what we want. We're not going to go see it unless you fix his fucking silly human teeth. So I...
Such a weird phenomena. Crowdsourcing art. I mean, this is kind of the antithesis of what we do, which is we make this shit because we think it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, we make the art. We put it out there. There ain't no fucking studio.
But we have the luxury of being incredibly low stakes, right? We don't have somebody that's only going to give us the money if they think it's going to return.
I am on a borrowed laptop and a $100 microphone. There is no fucking budget here. The only thing I'm spending is time and beer. So yeah, when it comes to needing $10 million to make your fucking masterpiece every now and then, you gotta fucking suck a little dick and eat a little crow and make the movie that you're almost happy with. And that's why it's really exciting. Like, that's why people flock to these A24 films or these Blumhouse films, because they're allowing directors and writers to make the art they want to make, to an extent. So anyway, all of that is to say, one, I think the studio is part of the reason Watcher in the Woods just doesn't, the ending doesn't land for me. And two, I think that's the same reason that you feel that horror movies are just so ham-fisted when it comes to the end of it. That's not to say that you're not right. Yes, there are formulas. Right, and for some reason everybody thinks there has to be a twist at the end, and there it doesn't. It sometimes you can just make a fucking movie for the sake of enjoying a fucking movie. Not everything has to be art, right? Not everything has to be fucking a discussion on the human psyche or a chase of your internal demons and the emotions that your mother left upon you. It doesn't have to be that. It can just be Peppa Pig. And Peppa Pig can just be Peppa Pig. Peppa Pig doesn't have to be a commentary on the British Commonwealth, right? Anyway. So yeah, I fully disagree with your fucking hyperbolic statement that horror endings are just slapped together. Some of them are, sure.
I'm sure you have like tons of examples, but I don't want to hear them.
Sure. So let's get into Watcher in the fucking Woods. And we've talked about how it got made. We talked about where it was. We talked about who did it. And we talked about how we got here. So let's start digging into the movie after I take a little piss.
Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, you gotta keep on moving, no time to tarry.
Peter Fonda and Susan George are Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry. There's nothing they won't try.
Larry can drive most anything, some old gun and shine. Afraid the way he moves his old machine and drives old Mary wild. Larry's what you call your crazy man, no chance he won't take.
Everything under control?
Yeah, merchandise on time.
It's been delivered and it's just waiting.
George, he says he'll kill us if you don't give him the money.
Robbery's a dangerous business.
But anytime you want out, you just holler.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, baby.
Law's gonna get you if you don't look out. At least they're gonna try. You got every rope coming at you in the sky.
That gun is mine.
I want him stopped.
Stop how?
Fresh right into him.
You better run now, you better move. In fact, you better fly. Nobody gets away with it. You're smacking law and order die. Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, right on.
I'm gonna eat your lunch, you long hair.
Did he say the other F word right there?
I think he did. I think he did, Tim.
Sure looks like he did.
Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry.
That sure looks right like Smokey and the Bandit to me.
It's a chase flick. It's a fucking Bonnie and Clyde, Natural Born Killers fucking chase flick. It's good. And that's J-Huff at his back. Welcome back to Disney Plus and Cussin'. We're talking about fucking J-Huff and
always let your conscience be your guide. Thank you.
Watcher in the Woods. So yeah, it's time to dig in a little bit. And we talked earlier. What did I say the name of that dude was? Tragic Puppy? Tickled Puppies?
Tickle Pickle.
That's a different story, Tim.
I think it was Tragic Puppy.
Triggered Puppy. We are actually going to be covering Triggered Puppy's version of Watcher in the Woods today, which is it starts out with that fucking. It's dark as fuck, boy. You got fucking kids singing in the woods, playing with their dolly, and you get this. This giallo fucking slasher fucking killer point of view shot, or at least what feels like a killer point of view shot, right? Like, sort of hiding in the woods, looking at her, like, low camera angles and point of view shots, and there's something spooky in the woods, and this little girl's doll, what, catches fire, and the little girl disappears, right? Something along those lines? Like...
So, the version I saw didn't have that intro.
Okay, that's fine. So, cause, and that's Ron's, that's Ron, Ronnie cut that out. Ronnie thought that shit was too dark. And that's, that is the first step in, maybe this is a little ham-fisted misdirection, but this is that moment where, there's a doll on fire in the woods and it feels like there's a killer or it feels supernatural. You don't really know for sure. But, you know, fuck, this is going to be a dark flick. But that scene gets cut, which is maybe for the best, considering, one, it doesn't really fit with anything else. Two, it raises more questions than it answers. Who the fuck was that little girl? What happened to her? Did the watch... It's a lot. So, yeah, that shit got cut out. But that is where we have those first moments of... How many versions of this movie did they fucking make, and what finally comes out? So start walking us through the film, Tim.
We're doing Zillow.
It's Zillow, yeah. We're riding with Tanea. It's a fucking
we're on a real estate hunt. I have no idea where. By the way,
is this England?
Because half the film. Half the film's cast is English,
yeah,
and half is American.
This is classic. And, that is a classic 70s horror issue, right? Is everybody is just allowed to speak in whatever accent they come with, and there's...
It's almost like spaghetti westerns where they're like allowed to speak whatever language they want, and they'll just dub it later.
They're just going
to
dub it. Yeah. Fuck it. We'll just dub it. The Italians got that shit right, though. Like, fuck it. Like, we'll make it whatever we want to make it later. Just let's get the shot. Are we in New England? Are we in Old England?
I definitely was feeling New England
It's one of the two Englands.
Oh, hey, yeah, my name's Mike. I'm the fucking mechanic for the grounds.
Hello, I'm Betty Davis.
Oh, hello! I don't know. They end up at it's a real deal, you know, like there are so many tropes that we encounter here that,
I mean, they basically pull up to
we're riding around with the real estate agent. We roll up on this fucking Tudor mansion. Like, I mean, it's a formidable house.
Okay. So I know the last one I showed you was a real fixer upper in the middle of the barrio, but this you're really going to like.
Not a Mexican around.
Except it's fully furnished. It's $1,000 a month, which feels like a lot. Not for that home, but just for them to be like, the price is right. Holy shit, that sounds great. Like, how much was rent in the?
Yeah, in the fuck, in 1980, like, you know.
I guess
is that a lot?
I guess $1,000 a month makes sense for a 4-bedroom home. I don't know how much rent was in the '80s.
I feel like that's like getting a mansion for $4,000 a month.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're looking at renting a, you know, kind of good size house for $3,000 in Colorado.
Yeah.
Late summer, so
I guess maybe,
you know, if we do the inflation calculator, we're gonna talk about the inflation calculator a lot when we get into Walt like going into business,
yeah,
in Kansas City.
Sure.
So, but
so not,
yeah, whatever. I don't know. Price is right. Price is right, as they say, is what as she says, the mom.
But there's a catch.
The deal is, it's like an Ozark when it's like, hey, the price is right, but you got to live with this fucking guy. Until he dies.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But it's like, it's even better than that because she lives in a house on the side. Mm-hmm. It's like an Airbnb host. Mm-hmm. That's Betty Davis.
And she's got Betty
Davis. So you got your family of four. You got your guy that looks kind of like the dad in Homeward Bound.
What's he do? What's his job?
He definitely plays piano, but I don't think that's his job. He's just a man of the world, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. They don't talk about it.
But he's got to go away for work for no reason a couple times.
He picks them ivories. He tickles them ivories. I know that.
Yeah, he definitely knows how to play the pie.
The mom is like the most mom-ass mom, and she kind of looks like Carrie Russell.
A little bit. I can see it. She definitely looks like a fucking mom. But that's the catch. It comes with Betty Davis, and she's going to stare at you.
And the daughter, Jan, who is definitely from Chicago, Jan looks like Xena Warrior Princess's bottom. What's her name? Gabriella?
She looks
Kevin
like...
Sorbo is rolling in his grave that he's not in yet because he was associated with something that was kind of gay.
Fuck Kevin Sorbo. That is an official...
Fuck Kevin Sorbo. Fuck Aaron Lewis and fuck Kevin Sorbo.
Oh, fuck. Damn. I saw a truck. I was getting my oil changed the other day, and there's this lifted truck in the oil change bay next to me, right? And its whole its whole back windshield just said, quotation mark, am I the only one, quotation mark, and then it credited it to Aaron Lewis, as if it was like the signature on a fucking email or some shit. Whole back windshield was just, am I the only one, Aaron Lewis.
It's just funny because like that doesn't actually convey anything at all.
But no, but they were so that truck has been forever stained.
Am I the only one?
That was a good joke that you didn't even acknowledge.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, no, I got it.
Yeah.
My first concert ever.
Fuck.
Headlined by Stain.
At one point, my dad and I bonded. You know what? You know what? Lewis until.
It fucking kicked ass.
Dude, he's got...
That concert kicked
God
ass.
Damn it.
He's got a great voice.
Yeah. You know who else fucking rocks? Kid Rock.
No.
Yeah. No, before
no, he's terrible. Before, he's so terrible. Aw,
dude. He's an American badass. And...
he's so terrible.
And that makes me mad. I hate how much I liked Kid Rock's music. Fuck.
I just remember, like, it being in my bedroom at Lost Creek over by Nichols Junior High and listening to Ba with the Ba.
Yeah.
And I thought that he had, like, a bunch of lyrics that were buried in that. But he was just saying gibberish. And that's so stupid.
I just thought it... I thought that Monster Magnet was also a good band. So none of the things that... None of our opinions matter. We were dumb. And it's okay to acknowledge that. Do you remember Monster Magnet?
No.
Do you remember Space Hog?
Yes.
Space Hogs.
Because we covered a Space Hog song in Crystal Pepsi.
Space Hog fucking rocks.
Space Hog had that song that slapped. And also, dude clapped fucking Liv Tyler's cheeks.
Speaking of clapping cheeks,
he clapped his hog on her cheeks, and I am rewatching Lord of the Rings, the extended version, just how I watched Watcher in the Woods, and goddamn that movie's good, and goddamn Liv Tyler is so fucking hot.
She was a crossword clue this week. I do the New York Times crossword now.
I have some regulars that come sit at my bar that do that, and I feel like they're smarter than me.
There is fucking, when you finish a Sunday New York Times crossword, you are allowed to slap a minority once. And you can get away with it.
Yeah, it's like you have to put on an ascot.
Yeah.
So the Watcher in the Woods.
Still know where to find Quaaludes. I say that as someone who has finished 3 Sunday New York Times crosswords, and it was like my proudest achievement of all time. Morgan was having a very serious conversation with me, and I just texted her my Sunday New York Times crossword time, like how long it took me to finish it. Anyway, Watcher in the Woods. Betty Davis. You have to live with Betty Davis. And then some spooky stuff starts to happen. Immediately spooky stuff starts to happen. There's always wind. The wind starts a howling. We get a cracked mirror. You can't see yourself in the mirror. So for a second here, I'm thinking, oh, we got ourselves a vampire joint. And then the ghost shows up. And so you're thinking, okay, we got ourselves a ghost joint. And then the mirror breaks.
Sorry, what did you say was a howling?
The wind's a howling.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows.
I just wanted to make sure that that's what was howling.
And always let your conscience be your guide. So,
do you know I got a vinyl of that for $4?
No.
At the local record store. And then when I was at Waterloo Records in Austin, I found like anniversary edition, whatever, of that, and it was like fucking like $100.
That's dumb. That's why I'm into cassettes and VHSs. Boy, I just got somebody to mail me 3 VHSs for free. Like that's what VHS collecting's like. Except the fucking mailman. I had 3 books and a DVD. All supposed to hit my fucking door at the same time. Guess what didn't hit my door? My books.
None of them.
Or my DVD. Anything. Fucking none of them. But all of them marked delivered. So I can't get refunds. I can't get them resent. Because as far as the tracking number is concerned...
Is somebody stealing your mail?
I think my mailman's just a piece of shit. This is the third time this has fucking happened. And so today I had to file a complaint.
Amazon at least fucking like takes pictures of the shit at your doorstep.
Yeah. And so that's the thing.
Like,
and so,
dude, we had a moment where there were these dogs that, because that was when we were on like fucking Alaraza South Side.
Yeah. Viva.
And our old house, you remember?
Yeah.
And like, we had these dogs that I loved those dogs. But they were problematic. They lived in our fucking flower bed. And it was Wiggles and a Beta Boy. That's what we called them. And Wiggles and Beta Boy loved us, hated our own dog, and hated the mailman.
Great.
And so, like, MeUndies never got delivered. I never got MeUndies. And it would just be like dogs on the package, like when I would go pick it up from the fucking post office that I had to drive like 12 minutes to.
Yeah. See, and, at least you got your undies, though.
And they just, like, didn't give us our mail. And I was like, fucking goddamn Wiggles and Beta Boy, fuck off.
They're not even my dogs.
And I was like, try to be like, to the mailman, like, hey, man, like, I would try to be like, when are you going to come through? Because I'll, like, meet you up the road or whatever. And he's like, no, that's not how it works. I'm like, well, let me tell you how it works is that I'm not getting my fucking mail.
Didn't you take it?
And then one day, and then I was like, man, I don't want to wish these dogs away because, like, I love them. But I wish these dogs would go away. And then one day, Animal Control, like, scooped up Wiggles. And I freaked the fuck out because Wiggles was the sweetest. I called her Wiggles because she wiggled so hard when she would see us because she was so excited that she would fall over. And then Beta Boy, I called him Beta Boy because he was such a little bitch. But they scooped up Wiggles, and then I like put out like a fucking, hey, please help this dog to my friend that was in, she was like involved with the animal control people.
Yeah.
Or at least like had an ear in there.
Yeah.
And then she might have been lying to me. She might have been lying to me. Just to make me feel better, but she did tell me that Wiggles got adopted.
Oh, Wiggles went to live on a farm?
Yeah, and then, well, I hope Wiggles got adopted because she was really, really sweet. And then Beta Boy escaped. He mauled some guy and escaped. And then we saw Beta Boy running around like months later. So good for Beta Boy.
He's just a dishwasher at multiple restaurants.
And after that, I started receiving my mail again. So.
Here's your undies. Where the fuck are we? Where?
At the in Watcher in the Woods, where are we?
Okay, so we've got cracked windows, we've got Spooky Duke, we've got a fucking creepy...
Okay, so Jan, we got Mrs. Elwood, we have... everybody convenes in the car. Are we going to take this place? I don't know. Why did she decide to rent this place out to us?
I think it was you, little girl. I think it was you. Oh, yeah, because you've got to get permission.
Oh, it was me? No, not you, Cindy.
Yeah, you've got to get permission from Betty Davis to move into the house. Not only does it come with a Betty Davis, but Betty Davis has to say okay. Anyway.
Cheap rent. She's got to like you.
She's got to like you. Spooky Dukes are
going to happen. This is the exact situation I'm hoping for in Fort Collins.
So, okay. Let's yada, yada, yada our way to... the boy. We meet we have ourselves a meet cute where
not yet. Cindy is she's like that archetype. We have no comic relief in this movie at all.
None.
And I think that like we have to think about the movies that don't really have comic relief. Because, like, you've got these grand stories, like, let's say, Dune and Star Wars. Or, well, Star Wars has plenty of comic relief, but, like, Lord of the Rings, right?
Lord of the Rings has plenty of comic relief.
I know, but they had to lean into that because it was kind of scant in the books, right? Like,
yeah.
It happened really organically, but you're reading a rather dry piece of content. And it happened with the Hobbits. Like, the Hobbits are the comic relief, even though they're the main fucking character.
And Gimli.
It took three Gimli's other Hobbits. Gimli's funny, too. But have you read Gimli? Like, Gimli's not as funny in the books as he is in the...
At full disclosure here, but I still haven't made it all the way through Lord of the Rings without falling asleep.
Like the movies?
Yeah. I have.
You should try and do that.
I know.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, no, it's great. Love Peter Jackson. Well done. I have seen Lord of the Rings from start to finish.
My favorite alien movie ever is Peter Jackson's District 19?
District 9.
District 9. It's so good.
So fucking good. That's a Peter Jackson joint?
That's a Peter Jackson joint.
For real?
He's South African. Yeah.
No, it's good. That's a good one. I didn't realize that's a Peter Jackson joint.
It's one of two movies I have on Blu-ray.
What did he also? He also did Freaked. Anyway, this isn't about Peter Jackson. This is about Betty Davis. And so yeah, there's no comedy.
Betty Davis decides to rent out. Mrs. Elwood, as she's called in the movie, decides to rent out this house to this family. Mm-hmm. And she turns to the wilderness and she says, "Is this what you wanted?"
Yeah.
And then all the trees, they do this like nodding thing where they go like...
Which suggests that she knows what's happening. Right? Like, when you see that, you get this idea that she is somehow involved. And that's not, like, a red herring. It's just a straight-up fucking lie. Like, she very clearly doesn't know what's going on. She knows her...
I think that she thinks that she's communicating with her daughter.
Okay, I can be sold that. I don't want to buy it, but you could sell it to me.
I don't think it breaks anything to, like, see the movie, think that, finish the movie, and then go back to thinking that. I you know. She feels like she's batshit.
She's suffered a severe
traumatized. She's traumatized. So you were right. You were right. She does cut her finger before she decides to rent the house.
Yeah.
That's like Disney. That's Disney blood, bro.
Yeah. We haven't really seen that yet.
Not a thing.
I mean,
and then
the pricking of the finger is kind of a thing in a few different. We've seen a little bit of pricked fingers. That's kind of that's as far as blood goes. We get it in Sleeping Beauty. That might be the only time we see it. Yeah, I'm gonna say Sleeping Beauty.
I'm sure there's plenty of instances of it, but
But yeah, no, this is okay. There's going to be violence. Someone is going to get hurt.
Oh, so they finally move into the house, and then she breaks a mirror
that she can't see herself
in.
And
this is,
yeah,
that she can't see herself in. And this is the second instance of glass breaking. And I just thought it was really ham-fisted that. I don't know where it's coming from, but you have a whole bunch of people going, "Opa, opa," and fucking clapping and shit.
Did you mean to say Mazel Tov?
Right.
Yeah, okay. Very good.
People say opa, too.
Okay.
There's nobody that I hate in the restaurant world more than people that decide it's time to be performative when someone breaks some fucking glass.
Okay, that's what you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell the joke again.
No.
But now I know what you meant.
Well,
and now it is
told. All this stays. It all stays.
Oh, opa! Okay, yeah. I haven't had that happen in a long time because there's no distinct cultures in Lubbock. It's
Oh, Cindy. That's what I keep writing Cindy. Her name is Ellie. I don't know where I got Cindy. It might be Cindy Brady. She was like the youngest Brady. This is the archetype of the, like, you remember Kung Pao? It's like, we're children, we're children.
Yeah, yeah.
They run by. Yeah, like that's.
Yes, no, it's exactly like that. This is.
You mean she lied to me?
This is the little sister. She is very clearly a little sister. Somebody wrote, hey, somebody typed into ChatGPT, script for little sister.
And this movie, yes, that's what they did then. And this movie continues to surprise me by making her actually pretty integral to the plot.
Yeah.
And she's a pretty good child actor, honestly.
No,
they just fed her fucking shit in the beginning to spout out.
Everybody delivers a great performance, top to bottom.
It just. So let's keep going. Yep.
Anyway. Are we at the sexy boy who rides motorcycles yet?
Yeah. His name is Mike. His name's Mike.
Hey, my name's Mike.
And another instance where I'm going, where are we?
Yeah.
And is Mike's mom American, but Mike's British? Or is that Mike's mom at all? Is he just some handy guy?
That's
in New England?
Which might also be Old England. No, that's Mike's mom. And she's important,
I
too.
Don't know. I don't know.
What?
The audience will know, but you won't. I just said, I don't know. I don't know. Mary Pierce is the lady. What are we doing on this property? I don't know. It's like some kind of ranch that's adjacent to Mrs. Elwood's place. But what does happen is that Jan and Mike are posturing like they're going to fuck each other.
So, yeah, so let's...
Like two young people should.
So just a little recap of the story world. We're sort of in this super small town. Almost like a village. Let's call it a village. So there's this mansion in the middle of the village on what appears to be the mansion's property, but not necessarily the mansion's property. Very near to the mansion.
The village. Maybe a little bit like Downton Abbey.
Exactly. But not like a... No, because that's just a property. That's a big-ass property. More like... You remember when I got Haight-Ashbury confused with Stratford-upon-Avon? More like... Yeah, it's nothing like that. It's fucking nothing like that. No matter how much that Rosemary Ann Sisson wishes it was, it's fucking nothing like that. It's a small town. And you can ride your little bike to everywhere, and maybe they have a little shop, or maybe they have to go into town to get there, but there are basically six people that live in the town, and also six people that are important to the movie, but also they can kind of leave the town for motorcycle races and or work excursions. But that's what you need to know. There is...
So, what I'm gathering is that the motorcycle race was not part of the final cut.
Did you not see the motorcycle race?
I saw the motorcycle race.
Correct. The motorcycle race... I believe was not part of the final cut.
And I was just sitting there going, what the fuck is going on with this fucking movie?
Well, because again, that's another opportunity to create a little bit of action, right? Here is a supernatural thing that can happen, which makes you go, the ghost is good. She is being protected. And it's another fucking red herring, if you will. And I could have done without the motorcycle scene. But Sexy Boy Drives Motorcycles, that did not make the cut. And it didn't need to be there. But what we begin to learn is it's the creepy cathedral that's going to play the biggest role in this missing girl. So we do learn... When they rent the house, that there is that Betty Davis's daughter disappeared or died. We don't know which, but she went missing, tragically. It was awful. We don't talk about it.
We don't talk about Karen.
No. So yada yada yada, motorcycle race. Yada yada yada, little.
No, but what about Narek?
So that's where we're getting to. So little sister. Now we're finding that the little sister is also communicating with Karen and or the Watcher, and we are led to believe.
I do like this.
Is the Watcher, not Karen, that is communicating, because she says specifically, no, not Karen. Right, so that is built into the plot.
The Watcher is more in tune with Ellie. I think that Jan is more in communication with Karen.
Mm-hmm.
But
so yeah, I'm there.
Regardless
I'm there
of you. The external forces that are communicating with them, Jan has like it's almost archetypal, right? Like Jan has the gift of sight.
Right.
Ellie has the gift of
hearing. Yeah. Ellie's gift.
And so like I like this in that like Ellie is
I like
this...
that song you're singing. That's a cute song. Look at it. La 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 la
la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la la Ellie steps out of the realm of comic relief padding into she's an essential part of this whole thing.
Yes.
And that was done, I think, really well.
Really well. No, God damn it. What is this movie if it has a different... I don't know.
This movie ties so much into something that we released last year. And this movie is fucking Goosebumps.
Yeah. Yo, no, like, I wrote in my notes that we should start the episode by playing the theme song from Are You Afraid of the Dark? But yeah, this is horror for kids. This is what it was supposed to be, was horror for kids. It's an episode of Goosebumps. It's an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
But there are so many more parallels when we get into, if you remember, the plot of that Goosebumps series is essentially it's I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah.
It's the flying hellfish from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
It's we did a bad thing and we're all trying to forget about it.
Yeah.
And we lost somebody. And not necessarily the flying hellfish with that one, but like there are things that this movie piggybacks on that, I mean, when Ellie is at the farm and she finds the dog and then she writes Narak into the fucking, when was The Shining made?
Are you wanting to know which came first, Narak or Red Rum?
Yeah.
Because I couldn't fucking tell you, but I guarantee that Kubrick didn't steal Red Rum from
from Watcher in the Woods.
From Jay Huff.
I think that Shining was in the 70s.
Hey Jamie, pull up that Shining release date. 1980, same year. These came out in the same year.
Well, then shit. Okay, yeah. So maybe somebody read Stephen King's book, but sometimes lightning just strikes at the same place at the same time.
I mean, writing backwards.
That makes me respect this more because I wrote down in my notes "Red Ripoff."
No, they came out same time. But I mean the idea of writing something backwards in a mirror isn't new. That is not a new horror concept. It's not necessarily a convention, but it's definitely something that has been done before. Because that's you use backwards writing in a mirror to help the audience understand that this is happening in an alternate timeline, right? Like this is how you let us know that we are seeing something happen from the other side, literally the other side, which again suggests fucking ghosts. And here's my thing. If they had just let this be a fucking ghost story with an undertone of loss and trauma and the fear of adolescence and living with the mistakes we make as children, goddamn, it could have hit so fucking hard. But because no one really allowed it to be what they wanted it to be, it is a good movie that never quite lands. So yeah, my only issue with the Karen backwards scene is when somebody actually goes, "Oh yeah, Narak, that's a good name. I think that's a perfect name for a dog." No, it's not. It's all consonants. The whole fucking thing. No, it is.
There's literally two vowels.
Yeah, I know, but they're not in the right spot. doesn't make any fucking sense. It's a harsh word. It is not a good name for a puppy. It just came to me.
She said you whispered it in my ear.
Yeah. Anyway, that's... It is...
Do we want to hear...
rip off. That's game.
Sorry, I got a kick out of what Ellie was listening to.
It's good.
I mean, it's the late 70s. I'm sure it was just the radio.
Yeah, that's just what music kind of sounded like.
But that music fucked.
So we've got a dog named Narek. Betty Davis says,
is she good or bad? Is she good or bad? Is she good or bad?
Ooh, Betty Davis? We don't know. Yeah. We don't know. And you know who else doesn't know? These kids' mom. Because they're like, stay the fuck
away. These kids.
Stay the fuck away from my kids, Betty Davis. Thank you for letting us live in your house.
I hope those kids don't fall into a pond anytime soon.
Stay the fuck away from my kids. So through her cunning investigation... with her sexy boyfriend, she begins to see circles. What could these circles mean?
Tom Colley?
Yeah.
First she falls into the water.
Yeah, yes. She was trying to get the sword and then of Gryffindor.
We finally figure out that Betty Davis is not evil because... Betty Davis keeps pushing down on her with a stick while she's stuck underwater when she falls into the pond.
So even
Ellie...
Yeah. No, she wasn't trying to...
Ellie freaking the fuck out.
Yeah, of course she is. Because Betty Davis is holding her sister underwater with a stick. Like, from anybody else's point of view, that's not a good thing to do.
She's trying to push her... free of the branches beneath the water that are holding her under.
Correct. But from above, what you see is a hag holding your sister underwater with a stick. And every time she tries to
come... She's just up, an old lady. I keep calling her a hag.
I'm just using the fucking... The terms of the times. That's all I'm doing here. But the perception is difficult. Right, and I at least I think that's what was supposed to be happening. I don't know that it necessarily lands, but that's, I think it was supposed to be a situation of, we know that Betty Davis is trying to help, but the characters within the story world do not. So
that's right. We
are able to see through and understand that, oh, Betty Davis isn't a hag. She's just plagued by trauma, and she's trying to help. But in the story world, we still have tension.
So the thing that this movie continues to do is that it introduces players within the story that might be the bad guy. And it's just this, it's a kind of cheap, like, red herring thing.
Yeah.
And I want to call the movie out for it, but I don't know, why would I? Because, like, this is a horror movie trope. This is a horror movie trope. Like,
you need it.
Is this the bad guy? Is this the bad guy? Is this the bad guy? It's like, oh, well, they're all, like, kind of involved in some way. They all, like, have something that they're not telling us.
That's what makes it fun.
No, they're not the fucking bad guy, but every step of the way, when on your first watch of this movie, you think that that's the person that's doing
on your first
it. So
watcher.
Tom Colley, like, creeps up and is like, oh, I'm going to touch your fucking hair, and she's freaking the fuck out. And then it's like, oh, you're not a ghost. I'm a dumbass. I'm fucking a half-wit or whatever. Like, and then it's like, oh, so that's a bad guy. So that's a bad guy. So that's a bad guy.
Yeah.
And it keeps fucking leapfrogging all the way to the end. And
is it Sexy Boy's mom? No. Is it Moonface Tom Colley? No. Is it British Old Man?
Mr. Keller, yeah, yeah. Mr. Keller, who, for some reason, his child self was not even British.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seance is fucking wild, though. You do have...
Oh, and also, when she's talking to Tom Colley, every time the raven opens his mouth, it sounds like somebody's farting.
That's a good note. I didn't make it.
So it like teeters on the edge of being a bad movie, but never quite like goes over that edge.
Right.
I think the whole reason we're dropping this episode on this day, as far as like when we're recording it and when it's dropping, is because there's an eclipse. The whole ritual thing happens during an eclipse.
It doesn't happen. And we're trying to recreate. Often.
A solar eclipse.
Correct.
I found this information out from this movie.
That a solar eclipse doesn't happen very often?
Yeah. I don't know, man. What do you think I am?
Yeah.
It's plugged into every aspect of human existence? I don't fucking know.
There was a solar eclipse just a little while ago. Like 3 or 4 months ago, even. And
that was super cool.
It was super cool. So, but I guess
San Antonio is like pretty much in the path of totality with this one.
Yeah, and that I think that's what makes this one cure. Is the path of totality? Like, there's gonna. It's weird how dark it gets. My favorite part is the shadows, and that was honestly because I've lived through a solar eclipse. I was most upset that during the eclipse scene, they didn't get the shadows right. So fuck you. That's the best part of an eclipse.
I got them little popcorn shadows while I was walking the dog around.
Yeah. Yeah, that shit's cute. But okay, so yeah, we figured it out. There's an eclipse coming. So if I'm gonna save Karen, I have to do it during the eclipse, and I have to get all these fucking kids to I Know What You Did Last Summer again in the fucking cathedral that I don't know why it wasn't torn down in the first place when the first child.
It's definitely not safe.
No. How was it not condemned after it burned the first time? Anyway, don't play in there, but they gather the
church. They're not conducting services in there.
It's time to do another seance, and here's where shit gets fucking weird. In the version that we watched, courtesy of Triggered Puppy, we got to see the intended ending, where during the seance... we have a fucking space monster show up.
Independence Day meets Terminator 2.
Yeah. And so J-Huff, I should have done a little bit more research into the creature creator. J-Huff was never super happy with how the creature came out, which I have to fully disagree with. I think this monster is spooky as fuck.
Scary as hell.
It's scary as hell, especially considering your target audience or who you think your target audience is. But I sent you a couple of screenshots of this bad boy at the end of the notes. Like, it's like part dog, part Pazuzu, part eagle, all gauze and metal. It's robotic. I feel like it's
definitely Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
Like, it's like Chrome Cthulhu that hovers and has like a lot of girth.
And wingspan.
Wingspan.
Like there's, yeah. Like it's an evil angel. Like it's fucking great.
But not necessarily evil because of what it does, right?
So I feel like that might have been part of the problem too. And also, remember, this came out of fucking nowhere. This whole time, we've been thinking to ourselves, okay, cool, it's a ghost story. Oh, No, wait, it's just a standard issue kidnapping story. Oh, no, it's a slasher. Oh, vampires? Oh, no, definitely ghosts. Okay, possession, just like The Exorcist. I saw that a couple years ago. I loved it. We're thinking all these things, and then... like, okay, we know it's supernatural. We know there's going to be a seance. Must be witches or demons. And you don't get a witch. You don't get a demon. You don't get a ghost. You get fucking... The Watcher... in all its glory, which, again, I think is badass. And it encapsulates Karen in its wings and takes her into space. Not Karen.
That would be Jan, not Karen.
Jan. Takes Jan into space, silently, mind you. Takes her into space where she sees Karen.
In, like, a... bathed in a, like... other dimensional, like, beam of light.
So then we get the thing that pisses me off the most. The thing that makes you go, you motherfuckers. You want to lean into sci-fi? Lean into sci-fi. You want to lean into monsters? Lean into monsters. But what we get is a spoon-fed explanation of what we are seeing. Which is not necessary. One, like, the whole buildup has been Jan meeting Karen and rescuing her. And Jan is finally in space and sees Karen, and they don't say a fucking word to each other. There's no, like, big embrace. It's just sort of, oh, there she is. She's trapped behind that light. And then, okay, she's back. And we have...
There's a big embrace.
We have, well, it's an embrace so, more than, like, she brings her back with her, and then the Watcher speaks through the little sister to
Ellie
to explain exactly what happened. Hey, this was an accident. I fucked up. The only way for us to make a trade is for you to come with me.
Yeah. It's like a manager, like, fucking comping something.
Yes! It's Hey, listen, I'm not here to make excuses. I'm here to apologize.
Yeah.
I'm not here to tell you what happened. I'm
anytime you guys need a table here, here's my card.
Yeah. God damn it. So, yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. And so here's where Triggered Puppy did a pretty good job. So we at least got to see the beast, right? But the test audience that got to see the beast did not like the beast. and Ron liked what the test audience liked. So the monster got cut out of the movie entirely. And so what the audience that originally digested this film saw, and what most people know as the ending, because it was the ending that you got on the Disney VHS, was just sort of a beam of light that takes over the little sister. Ellie that takes over Ellie and does the narration explanation. It's Poochie has to go home now.
Yeah.
So you just see a big blue ball of light, and then Ellie explains why Poochie has to go home. And then you get a light hug between a still teenaged Karen and Bette Davis, and then fucking credits roll.
That particular ending was powerful, though. That was like some Fly to the Navigator shit.
So, thank God you at least had that. But this is one of those situations where, like, you were right in that there are a lot of horror movies. And again, I think it is because of the studio system and these fucking focus groups. Where, yeah, like, at least we have them coming together. But yeah, you got an ending that was just like, movie's over. Just a heads up. Yeah. We're done now. We're done here. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. So I guess that's one of those things where, for me, that's...
Why did this happen? How will it not happen again?
Yeah, there's it's the ending to Lost, right? And people can fight.
Did we beat anybody?
Yeah.
Is there a malicious force at all?
What's the...
It was just like a fucking misfiling error cosmically, like...
Yeah. Oh, you were just going to do some paperwork? Like, what... What about Karen's...
It shouldn't have happened this way.
23 years that she's been trapped in that beam of light? Does she understand the concept of time in that light? Like,
hey, but when she finally did manifest... would.
But... Yeah, it was... at the end of the day, it was really exciting for us to actually get the opportunity to talk horror a little bit. On a Disney podcast, it was really fun to dip our toes into the dark era as we take a little sidestep from the in-depth research and development of our Marceline to Mowgli series. But just like most episodes of Plussin' and Cussin', it just didn't really end. It was just over. Just like this one is.
Yeah. It's over, yeah. But we had our fun. And depending on how we release this, you might not know what the hell we're talking about with the Marceline to Mowgli thing, but I do intend to like post some shit on our different social media type stuff to kind of forecast what we've got coming for you.
As far as the eclipse ellipse.
Well, that too, but also like the whole Walt bio, I do intend to punctuate it with some levity, which is what this was intended to do, but we're definitely going to be, putting this out, on the eclipse date. So hopefully you guys will have all seen that. At this point.
Or we're all dead. What if it wasn't an eclipse at all? Maybe no one will hear this at all.
Oh, you know. Because of the state of emergency. Up in an instant.
Take me. The rapture.
I'm like that woman in Independence Day that is just like standing on top of the building holding her sign up.
We come in.
Instantly vaporized.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We come in peace.
That's how I want to go.
Immediately? Vaporized?
Yeah, and you know, if it was just me, then that would be fine. But I have to worry about, like, all of my, like, progeny.
Eh, you don't have to worry about shit if you're instantly vaporized.
Yeah, no, I won't be worrying about it, but I want to, like, lay the ground for... minimal suffering for the rest of them, you know.
Then you better get that done before the end.
I listen to too much Dan Carlin. I think about like the rest of the world, over the course of history, and like how much intense suffering is done all over the globe.
Yeah.
And I'm just like freaking out about like it could have happened here, kind of shit.
Yeah,
you know?
And it could any day now. God bless an election year. Hey, am I the only one? Aaron Lewis.
Am I the only one who sells? Oh, is that you're kind of just be your guide?
That's fun.